Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is William Grider, who is the National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation and the author of the bestsellers One World Ready or Not, Secrets of the Temple, and Who Will Tell the People. A reporter for 40 years, he has written for The Washington Post and Rolling Stone and has been an on-air correspondent for 6 frontline documentaries on PBS. His latest book is The Soul of Capitalism, Opening Paths to a Moral Economy. And his latest article at The Nation is The Big Lie Loses. And we're waiting now to get Bill Grider on the phone. Apparently he's not with us right yet. Can you keep calling him? Because we do have an appointment to talk to him now. And I spoke to him shortly before he went on the air. Again, we're hoping to get through to William Grider, the National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation and author of the bestsellers One World Ready or Not, Secrets of the Temple, and Who Will Tell the People. His latest article at The Nation is The Big Lie Loses. And, of course, The Big Lie is the, according to William Grider, is the idea that somehow the people who caused the crash in 2008, the ones that really tanked the economy, have managed to convince most Americans that somehow they are responsible for the collapsed economy, and that the Social Security and these other popular federal programs are to blame for the deficits instead of the reckless behavior of those on Wall Street who brought about the collapse of the economy. And of course, George W. Bush, who presided over the collapse of the economy in 2008, is also running up a couple of wars he didn't pay for that contributed to it as well. William Grider, thanks for joining us. And we're discussing your article at The Nation, The Big Lie Loses. I was sort of giving a vamping a bit there, describing the big lie. So why don't you describe the big lie?
Well, I'm fighting off my dog, so.
is that what happened? So
they want to be in on this interview, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Okay, I'm getting him locked in another room. The big lie that has been popularized, I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like it, except maybe during World War II, where the whole country was taught to believe certain things. And it was so powerful that almost no one would challenge it, except a few of us flakes on the left, I guess. But the lie was this, led by Pete Peterson and other financial billionaires, they told the country through the big media that Social Security and entitlements in general, Medicare, et cetera, were responsible for our debt and deficits. And that's a lie. They were shifting the blame from our economic predicament to the wrong people, in fact, to people who were victims. And I could go into great detail explaining why this was the case, but essentially, if you read the newspapers, you heard again and again that Social Security and entitlements caused the debt and the deficits. I heard it again tonight on PBS in an interview. There was standard talk of the major media. People at large who actually pay the money into Social Security every payday and their deductions from their paycheck know that this is a lie. Not all of them, of course, but most people, working people, understand that money is taken out of their paycheck and put into a Social Security trust fund, which will eventually cover their retirement benefits. That's the way the system has worked, has always worked since the 1930s. And the Social Security does not borrow from the rest of us, the Treasury or the federal government. The opposite occurs. The federal government borrows from Social Security. At this point, it has now owed Social Security Trust Fund something like $2.7 trillion. Now, people like myself have written this again and again, or literally, in my case, over 20, 25 years. But the power of mass media, when it wants to tell the same lie over and over again, is overwhelming. The miracle of this moment, in my view, is that the people never bought the lie. Obviously, a lot of elites did, in the media, in government, in politics, etc., including both political parties. But if you go to the, and you, anybody can do this, go to Google and look up all the polling on Social Security, and you will see that it's still overwhelmingly not just endorsed, but defended by the broad public. And it doesn't split much along ideological lines, because people, whether they're conservatives or liberals, understand what it's about. So I'll stop talking, but you can tell I have some passion on this.
Sure. Well, I've
been arguing it for literally since the 1980s when they did the bait and switch with Social Security recipients. And I told myself then, I was then a reporter and editor in Washington Post, I didn't stand up effectively at that moment, but by God, when they came back to get this money, I was gonna stay with the issue, and I have.
Well, William Grider, I feel equally passionate about the insult and injury that these Wall Street titans, who are responsible for our collapsed economy, and the idea that they can that they've come up with this way of punishing the wrong people, as you say, from the nation's economic ills by demonizing Social Security, which they've been trying to blame for the deficits instead of their own reckless greed. And Pete Peterson, who you mentioned, he's been spending money, which, of course, to him is nothing. He's worth $10, $15 billion. He's been buying all of these academic whores and media pundits in New York and Washington. He even underwrote some of the Simpsons-Bowles Commission. He's got Maya McGuinness on the payroll. He's got the Concord Coalition. He has... Every time any think tank in Washington has a seminar on the economy, he's there, obviously underwriting it all. I mean, it's amazing to think that the chutzpah of these people is breathtaking.
But Ian, you have just described why I am feeling exhilarated by these events, because I've followed this literally over several decades, and I saw the people putting in place this concoction, this fiction that somehow the old geezers are robbing from the young and are draining the vital fluids of our society by their outrageous entitlements, etc., etc. And I thought, well, this surely can't settle. And then I watched as the big media, important pundits, with a few noble exceptions, who bought into this lie and repeat it endlessly. They're repeating it again this week and lamenting the fact that Congress and the President failed to do anything about Social Security, which we all know is the source of our problem, blah, blah, blah. So you see, what I'm recognizing is that the lie lost.
Well, you know, just to give the audience an idea of the lie and how pervasive it is and how often it's been put out there, in one of the presidential debates, perhaps it was the vice presidential debate, Martha Raddatz of ABC News, who's a part of the press establishment, prefaced the question by saying, you all know that Social Security is going broke. Which is not.
Wrong, right.
So, I mean, it's...
You know, my guess is, I don't want to pick on individual reporters. She's not any dumber than any others, and she's probably pretty smart.
Yeah.
But she's never done the reporting.
Right.
I mean that literally. And she's not alone. David Brooks has never done the reporting. I can say that with great confidence, because if he'd done the reporting, he wouldn't have the nerve to write those things, because he would know they are mendacious. I'm feeling like it needs to be said, and I will say it again and again, I'm sure, that the big money, notwithstanding the fact that it dominates the mass media and it controls the message and finances the politicians and it does this and does that, blah, 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 it also can lose when it's trying to sell something to ordinary people that the ordinary folks know is a lie.
Well, you could argue that's what happened. That's what happened in the last election, in terms of the plutocrat from Wall Street that they were trying to sell. Again, I'm speaking with William Grider, the national affairs correspondent for The Nation, and the author of the bestsellers One World Ready or Not: Secrets of the Temple and Who Will Tell the People. He's been a reporter for 40 years and has written for the Washington Post and Rolling Stone, and has been an on-air correspondent for 6 Frontline documentaries on PBS. And his latest book is The Soul of Capitalism: Opening Paths to a Moral Economy. And his latest article at The Nation is The Big Lie Loses. Just to touch on the stories of today, William Grider, as the least productive Congress since the 1940s, the 112th goes off into the sunset and the 113th begins today. It's obviously the Speaker, John Boehner, has been sort of soundly beaten up in the last couple of days. He survived the vote and the long knives of Cantor. It looks to me like Cantor could have won that, but he doesn't want that job. It's better to have this guy,
That's the hangman's job.
Exactly.
Well, but Ian, let me make another point off of what I've been ranting about. I have also a somewhat eccentric understanding of what's happening now in politics, which is optimistic, because I view what we have seen in the last few months, starting with the great election outcome, of what I think is going to prove to be a profound shift in our politics. And by that I mean the conservative era that we have lived with for 30 years, starting with Ronald Reagan and Milton Friedman and all that good stuff, is over. That's not recognized yet, unfortunately, by most politicians, but that's what events are telling me. And some of my friends and critics on the left, who I've shared their criticisms of Obama, etc., but I think what they're missing is that the deep ideological cast of politics in this country is like a big ocean liner. It slows down, and then it starts a turn, which doesn't happen in one event or 10 events or 50 events. It is like a long, sweeping turn, and that's what we've entered into, and that's what makes me optimistic. So, and I am willing, for the moment at least, to judge President Obama more sympathetically than I usually have, because I think he's now being put in a position, partly by his own design, I hope, to be able to shift the focus of his own politics in his second term. I can't guarantee that that's going to happen. I may be disappointed, but right now I'm seeing the ingredients of a new politics. Let me give you one brief example of what I mean by that. The press coverage is still obsessed with the fact that those nasty Republicans have set up another cliff and another cliff after that and another cliff after that. And based on their own experience with this, they are soon again writing gloom and doom stories about, well, yes, we got through this crisis, but there's another crisis coming with the debt limit in 2 months and then another one after that with the silly sequester where we're going to cut the defense budget by $400 billion. God help us, if we could, we would. But in any case, they haven't yet grasped that the Republican Party, and especially the financial moguls led by Karl Rove, who have financed the Republican Party into taking these positions, are now astride an impossible contradiction. And it goes like this. The Republicans say, we're going to stick to our guns. We don't care that we lost the election. We don't care that the people dislike us. We are going to block everything until the Democrats and Obama cave in and they whack all these silly social programs and they cut Social Security, blah, blah, blah. And I suggest the question to ask is, where do these guys come from and who hires them to be our elected representatives? Because the answer, everyone knows, is the corporate financial wealth holders and powerful institutions that have been pushing this song and insist that it's necessary. Only now they're little tigers on the right. The Republican House members are proposing to put our economy, our valuable position in the world economy and the faith in the dollar and the U.S. good behavior at risk. And they say they're willing to pull it down. You see what I'm driving at?
Sure.
The politics we need to start right now, and I'm going to write this, I'm sure, again and again in the pages of the Nation, is forget John Boehner for the moment. Forget all these silly right-wing crazies in the House of Representatives. The question needs to be put to Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, and to Karl Rove, and to the Bank of America, and to the Wall Street investment houses like Goldman Sachs. These people all made a point of financing the Republican Party in this last election. Is this what they paid for? Is this what they want? Because they can't have it both ways. They can't say, government has to be respectful of the financial markets and our financial institutions, because if we get in trouble, the whole country is just gone. It's just gone. And then at the same time, put these goons in the role of controlling congressional decisions, and the goons say, we want to tear down the temple. We're perfectly comfortable with collapsing the U.S. credit rating in the world. So this is, to me, a very promising politics if people in the center and the left, whoever, just ordinary people of common sense, will grasp the opportunity and drive it home to those bankers and the rich guys, including Mr. Pete Peterson, and say, is this what you guys are after? Because you're going to wreck the country now, again, if we let you get away with this.
So, William Grider, what's your sense then of the you in your article at the Nation, The Big Lie Loses, you mentioned that the President Obama has been surrounded by bean cutters from the Clinton era, and they call themselves New Democrats. But essentially what they did was they, because the unions weren't coming up with the kind of competitive money needed, Clinton pivoted to Wall Street, and the Democrats became Wall Street light, and the Republicans, a wholly owned subsidiary of corporate America, and corporate America was able to rent out the Democrats. And you're saying, no, wait a minute, maybe we need some new Democrats now. And would
new,
that
new
what
we need new
Democrats now? How about a new Secretary of the Treasury? I mean,
here I have to say, if you listen to the Washington gossip, and it's not always wrong, the signs are not, the portents are not promising. I mean, the gossip is that Jack Lew, who was a perfectly decent man, I'm sure, but he's been a respectable agent of the conventional wisdom for 30 years or longer, and he's a budget guy, and he came and he said, see, I don't want to badmouth him. I'm sure he's a serious and competent and conscientious person. But if you make him Secretary of Treasury, you're basically saying, let's continue the form of governing that Robert Rubin launched in 20 years ago with the Clinton administration, which is basically the financial view of what matters in the economy. And as long as you do well by the investment banks and the largest commercial banks, then America will be fine. And not to mention the multinational corporations, which are free to move their production wherever they think they can make it most profitably. My sense is that, not to fight on individuals, but if Obama doesn't have an understanding at this point that he needs to shift to a more aggressive and imaginative agenda of rebuilding the economy with, of course, first the objective of creating the jobs we desperately need to get back our balance, but beyond that, to rebuild the country. And I mean that in everything from, you know, green energy and enterprises to rebalancing the tax system, to restoring obligations of corporate managements to the country rather than to the globe. They're the American companies, and if they want to be American companies, they need to do the following. You know, that sort of politics in it. People will say, oh, this is another one of those crazy protectionist left-wingers. All I'm describing is what all of the other major industrial countries in the world do every day. And I mean from Japan to Germany to all the others. So America's lived in this tent for the last 30 years or so, believing in its, or being told of its own superiority, even though working people knew that wasn't true for them. And now we've hit the wall. It ought to be time to tell some truth to the people about our position in the world. And I have to say, Obama has a mixed record on that, but he's been pretty good on a lot of stuff. I mean, he's tried to explain to people that these trade deficits are draining our energy, and we need to shift our trade policy and so forth. He hasn't pushed it as aggressively as he ought to, nor has he pushed a stare down with the banking system and a lot of other things. But I'm not willing to sort of badmouth him and give up on him.
No, maybe he just needs some wind at his back.
Yeah, and he's gotten this far. Right. With enormous odds against him. I mean, peel back 2 years ago.
Right. Well, I'm afraid we're pretty much out of time here.
I'm
glad you joined us. I'm glad the dogs were settled, and let's pick up the.
They're padding around me now like I've betrayed.
Right. Well, let's pick up the conversation later, and I thank you for joining us.
Try me again. Great. Thank you.
William, I was just speaking there with William Grider, the National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation and author of the bestsellers One World, Ready or Not, Secrets of the Temple and Who Will Tell the People. His latest book is The Soul of Capitalism, Opening Paths to a Moral Economy. And his latest article, The Nation, is The Big Lie Losers. We're going to take a brief station break and bestselling author Jared Diamond will join us.
Every crack, anybody wanna tell it like it is to each other, like you would to a sister or a brother, and cut this cosmopolitan style.